A Contra Podcast Conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today we're doing a deep dive into something that, well, probably affects most of us every single day. We're tackling Neary All's really influential book, Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products.
Yeah, this one's kind of essential reading if you want to understand modern tech, I think. It's basically the playbook, isn't it?
It really is. It answers the fundamental question that you hear designers and entrepreneurs asking all the time. Why do some products just, you know, grab us and become part of our routine?
Exactly. While others, even with huge marketing budgets behind them, just fizzle out, Eel argues it's about design, not just ad spend. These successful products build user habits almost like an unconscious reflex.
That's the core idea we want to unpack today. How do they do it? What's this sort of secret science behind products that become automatic parts of our lives? We're looking at the blueprint. AL lays out the hook model.
And before we jump into the model itself, it's worth knowing a bit about Neary All. His background is, well, pretty perfect for this topic. He's got the academic side covered, an MBA from Stanford.
Right, but it's not just theory. He actually spent years working inside industries that are masters of attention, video games, and advertising.
Exactly. So he saw firsthand what works, what really keeps people coming back. He gets the mechanics of engagement from the ground up.
And then he combined that practical experience with teaching, right?
Yeah.
Applied consumer psychology at Stanford. So he bridges that gap between doing and understanding the why.
Mm-hmm. And what I think really adds weight is his later book, Indistractable.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point.
Because, you know, Hooked teaches you how to build these engaging, potentially distracting things, and then Indistractable teaches you how to manage them.
It shows he's thought about both sides of the coin, the power and the responsibility.
Right. It lends a lot of credibility, especially when we get to the ethical parts later. He's not just saying build addictive stuff. He's wrestled with the implications.
Okay, so let's frame the book itself. Hooked is really presented as a practical guide, isn't it? Like a playbook for anyone building a product, designers, marketers, entrepreneurs.
Totally. The focus is on creating that long-term engagement, the kind where users come back on their own without needing constant ads or prompts.
The goal is making your product the default choice, the thing people turn to automatically when they have a certain need or feeling. That's the competitive edge now.
And the way to achieve that, according to AL, is this central framework, the hook model. It's a cycle, four steps.
And it's quite elegant because it takes these ideas from behavioral psychology, like BJ Fogg's work, which can be complex, and makes them really accessible, really actionable.
Yeah, those four steps are trigger, action, variable reward, and investment. We'll break each other down.
What I like is that it doesn't just describe what successful apps like, you know, Facebook or Pinterest do. It explains why those design choices work psychologically.
Absolutely. And importantly, he wraps it all up with an ethical framework later on, the manipulation matrix, which is crucial. It forces creators to think about whether they're genuinely helping users.
Okay, let's dive into that cycle. Step one, the trigger. This is the starting pistol, right? The cue.
Exactly. The whole point of repeating this hook cycle is to forge a strong link, an association between a user's problem or feeling and the product as the solution. So strong, it becomes automatic.
And Neary All talks about two kinds of triggers.
Right. External and internal. External triggers are the obvious ones, things in our environment. An ad, someone telling you about an app, a notification popping up on your phone.
The notification seems key for digital products.
Definitely. And within external triggers, he highlights owned triggers. These are things like the app icon on your home screen or an email newsletter you subscribe to.
So the company kind of owns a little piece of your digital space.
Wow.
Give them permission.
They're valuable because the company has direct access. But the real goal, the ultimate aim, is to link the product to internal triggers.
Okay, and what are those exactly?
These are your feelings, your thoughts, your existing routines. This is where the magic happens for habit formation because the external prompts become less necessary.
So like feeling bored or maybe a bit lonely.
Exactly. Think right. About it. You're waiting in line. You feel that little pang of boredom or impatience. What do you instinctively reach for?
My phone.
Yeah.
Probably. Open something.
Right. Successful products tap into those negative emotions. Boredom, loneliness, uncertainty, FOMO, confusion. They position themselves as the immediate, almost unconscious go-to solution for that feeling. The internal feeling itself becomes the trigger.
Okay, so the trigger fires, maybe I feel bored, and that leads to step two, The action.
Correct. The action is the simplest behavior you do in anticipation of getting a reward. And here, Yao leans heavily on Dr. BJ Fogg's behavior model.
The BMAT thing.
Yeah, exactly. Behavior happens when motivation, ability, and a trigger are all present at the same time. B equals MAT.
We've got the trigger. Motivation. That's about our basic human drives, right?
Yeah.
Seeking pleasure, avoiding pain, hope, fear.
Uh-huh. Those deep-seated drives. But here's the key insight for product designers. Trying to significantly boost someone's core motivation is actually really hard.
Okay, so what can designers control easily?
Ability. How easy or simple the action is. It's far, far easier to make the desired action simpler than it is to make someone more motivated.
Ah, okay. So make it ridiculously easy to do the thing.
Precisely. If the action requires too much effort, time, money, physical effort, thinking too hard, people just won't do it consistently, no matter how motivated they are initially. Friction is the enemy of habit.
That explains things like infinite scroll, doesn't it? Or Amazon's one-click buy. You don't even have to think.
Absolutely. They're minimizing friction, reducing the steps, reducing the mental effort the brain cycles required. The easier it is to do, the more likely you are to do it when triggered.
So the mantra is, make doing easier than thinking.
You got it. That seamless action then leads to the core of the hook, what some might call the secret sauce. Step three, variable reward.
Okay, so after I take the action, I get a reward. But the variable part is key, right? Why is unpredictability so powerful? It feels a bit manipulative, maybe.
Well, it taps into something hooked in our brains. Predictable rewards are nice. They satisfy us. But variable rewards, they kind of hijack our dopamine system.
Dopamine, the anticipation chemical.
Exactly. It's not the reward itself that drives the craving so much as the anticipation of the reward. That uncertainty, the maybe this time I'll get something great, keeps us hooked. Think slot machines or checking email.
It goes back to those Skinner experiments with pigeons, right? Variable reinforcement creates the strongest habits.
Spot on. Yael identifies three main types of variable rewards that work really well in products. First, rewards of the tribe.
Social stuff. Likes, comments.
Yep. Our deep need for social connection, acceptance, belonging. You post something, you don't know who will like it, what comments you'll get, or if you'll get any response. That variability keeps you checking.
Okay, makes sense. What's the second type?
Rewards of the hunt. This taps into our ancient foraging instincts. We're searching for resources, for information.
Like scrolling through a newsfeed or Twitter.
Exactly. You're hunting for the next interesting story, the next valuable piece of information, the next funny video. You don't know what the next scroll will reveal, and that keeps you scrolling, hunting. Email works like this too, hunting for that important message.
And the third one?
Rewards of the self. These are about intrinsic motivation, feeling competent, achieving mastery, getting things done.
Ah, like clearing your inbox to zero, or hitting a new level in a game, or maintaining a streak on Duolingo.
Precisely. It feels good to achieve something, to feel a sense of control or completion. The variability might come from the challenge level, or just the satisfaction of progress itself.
So, trigger, action, variable reward. What's the last step?
The final and really crucial step is investment. This is where you, the user, put a little bit of work back into the product.
Work? Like what?
It could be anything small, posting a photo, adding a friend, saving a setting, writing a review, curating a playlist, entering data. It's not for an immediate reward, but it improves the service for the next time.
Okay, and why is that so important?
It does two really clever things. First, the investment often loads the next trigger.
How so?
Well, think about sending a message on WhatsApp or Slack. That action, that investment of typing the message, sets you up to receive a notification later, an external trigger when someone replies. Your investment primes the next loop of the hook.
Ah, clever. It keeps the cycle going. What's the second thing?
This is maybe even more powerful. The investment stores value in the product. Unlike, say, a physical object that wears out, these products often get better the more you use them.
Better how?
You store value in the form of content you've created, data you've entered, followers or reputation you've built, skills you've learned within the app. Think about your years of photos on Instagram or your professional network on LinkedIn.
Right, leaving would mean losing all that stuff you've put in.
Exactly. It dramatically increases your switching costs. You're less likely to leave because you've invested so much. The product has become more valuable to you personally over time.
That accumulation of value and the loading of future triggers?
Yeah.
Wow, it really locks you in, doesn't it?
It does. And that level of influence, that ability to shape behavior and create investment, is why IYAL brings in the ethics so strongly with the manipulation matrix.
Right. You mentioned that earlier. How does that work?
It's basically a simple grid to help creators check their intentions. It asks two questions. One, does this product materially improve the user's life?
Okay. What's the second?
Two, does the creator personally use the product? Would they use it themselves?
So where do you want to be on that grid?
Ideally, you want to be a facilitator. That means the product does materially improve users' lives. And D, the creator uses it too. They believe in its value.
And the bad place?
The unethical extreme is the dealer. That's where the product doesn't really improve lives. It might even harm them. And D, the creator wouldn't use it themselves. They're just exploiting a vulnerability.
It's a good gut check for anyone building something using these techniques. Are you facilitating or dealing?
Exactly. It's a necessary check on the power the hook model provides.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit. If someone listens to this, what are the main takeaways, the big themes they should remember from Hooked?
I think the first one is huge. Habits are the ultimate competitive advantage.
Meaning, once your product is ingrained in someone's routine, what IYAL calls the habit zone, it's incredibly hard for competitors to dislodge you, even if they have a slightly better product.
Right. That default automatic usage is like a protective moat. People stick with what's familiar and easy. Inertia is powerful.
Okay, theme one, habits beat features. What's another?
Theme two, the journey from external to internal triggers is the real goal. You might start by paying for ads or sending notifications, but the product truly wins when users start using it automatically based on their feelings or routines.
So the aim is to make those external prompts eventually unnecessary. The feeling of boredom is the prompt.
Precisely. When the internal trigger is firmly attached to the product, the habit is formed.
Got it. Theme three.
Simplicity is king for action. Remember BMAT. Focusing on the A ability is key. Make the desired action ridiculously simple. Reducing friction is almost always more effective than trying to pump up motivation.
Make it easier than thinking.
You nailed it. And the last big one.
It's the ethics, right?
Yeah.
Theme four, the moral imperative.
Absolutely. This knowledge, this ability to influence behavior, comes with responsibility. IYAL is clear that creators need to consciously decide to build things that genuinely help people, not just exploit psychological loops for engagement metrics.
Build hooks that empower, not entrap.
Well put.
You know, the book has some really memorable lines that capture these ideas well.
It really does. Very quotable.
I like this one. Instead of relying on extensive marketing, habit-forming companies link their services to the user's daily routines and emotions. It just shifts the focus entirely, doesn't it? From shouting at people to integrating into their lives.
Yeah, that's a core shift. And how about this one on action? To initiate action, doing must be easier than thinking. That just perfectly sums up the focus on friction reduction.
It really does. Every smooth interface follows that rule. And on the rewards, variable rewards are one of the most powerful tools companies use to hook users.
That highlights the engine, right? The power of anticipation, that dopamine hit from the unknown. That's what keeps people coming back again and again.
And finally, linking it all together. The ultimate goal of a habit-forming product is to solve the user's pain by creating an association so that the user identifies the company's product or service as the source of relief.
That's the conditioning aspect. Feeling bad, use product, feel slightly less bad, repeat until automatic. It's powerful stuff.
So knowing all this, it's not just useful for people building products. It feels really important for us as users too, for managing our own digital lives.
Oh, absolutely. Understanding the hook model is like getting the user manual for your own brain in the digital age. You can use it to recognize and dismantle unwanted digital hooks.
How would you do that practically?
Well, start with the triggers. Be conscious of what prompts you to pick up your phone or open an app. Is it an external notification or an internal feeling like stress or boredom? Once you identify it, you can manage it. Turn off non-essential notifications, those owned triggers.
Okay, manage the triggers. What about the action?
Increase the friction. Make the unwanted action harder to do. Don't just log out. Maybe delete the app between uses. Move distracting apps off your home screen into a folder. Maybe even try grayscale mode on your phone. Anything that adds a step, adds friction, gives your conscious brain a chance to intervene.
Make doing harder than thinking, essentially reversing the design goal.
Exactly. And you can flip this whole model around to build positive habits too, right?
But yeah, how would that work? Like for exercise or studying?
Sure. Set a clear trigger. Maybe link it to something you already do, like after my morning coffee, I'll study for 15 minutes, or set a specific alarm.
Make the trigger obvious, then the action.
Make the initial action incredibly simple. Don't aim for a full hour workout. Aim to just put on your workout clothes. Or just open the textbook to the right page. Lower that initial barrier.
Right. Reduce the friction to get started. And the reward.
Make it variable. Don't have the exact same reward every time. Maybe sometimes you listen to a new podcast while running. Sometimes you treat yourself to a nice tea afterwards. Sometimes you just acknowledge the win. Keep the brain anticipating.
And finally, investment.
Yep. Track your progress. Keep a streak going. Use an app where you log your workouts or study sessions. Seeing that accumulated investment makes you not want to break the chain. You're storing value in your own habit.
That's actually really practical, using the enemy's tools for good, so to speak.
Sort of, yeah. It shows the framework itself is neutral. It's how it's applied that matters.
So wrapping up, what's the biggest thing you take away from Hooked?
For me, it's the demystification. User engagement isn't some random magic. It's largely a science. This four-step model, trigger, action, variable, reward, investment, is just a really clear, powerful lens to understand why some things grab us and others don't. It works as a diagnostic tool and a building guide.
Yeah, it provides that structure. For me, I think the most resonant part is that ethical dimension Eyal insists on. He gives you this incredibly potent toolkit for influencing behavior, but immediately follows up with, okay, now use this responsibly.
That accountability is key.
It really is. It forces you to ask, are the habits we're building or the habits we're falling into actually making lives better? That feels like the crucial question, both for creators and for all of us navigating this Hooked world.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.